Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of light in the search, discovery, and revelation of light on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the Creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet, www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, police dog, police man. Should a police dog be considered a police officer? Are police dogs safe and responsible? I've heard that if you hit or kill a police dog, you are guilty of assaulting or killing a police officer, or something like that, close to that anyway. Considering some policemen are irresponsible, how can we perceive that a dog can make the same decisions that a man can when in conflict with humans? What is wrong with this picture? Isn't the dog's mouth naturally designed to rip and tear flesh? This means they should only be employed when presented with a lethal threat, because the dog is a lethal weapon. Now, we do know that dogs are used for other bomb sniffing and things, drug sniffing and things like that. Right? Then we get to that. Just a little background information. I know we all know what a dog is. So I went to the dictionary, it says dog is a domesticated carnivorous animal. That's an animal who is dominated by man, right? And subdued by humans. So that means he's subjected to a human authority. He's domesticated. Like a wolf, he's not subjected to a human authority. I guess they have wolves that kind of like humans and things like that, but they're, that's an animal that's less likely to be subjected to human authority than a dog, right? So carnivorous is an animal who feeds on other animals' flesh. So he eats flesh. You got to keep that in mind. I don't care how domesticated your dog is or how trained your dog is. He's a flesh eater. So when a dog bites someone, it is like biting into the flesh of his prey. The individual is being destroyed or incapacitated by the teeth and jaw strength of the dog. The dog is his own weapon. Under the charge of a police officer, he is an extension of a weaponry of the police officer. Wikipedia, I had some very interesting things to say about dogs, history of dogs. And this is very important. And if you want to know something about something, look at its history. All right? So they said that early in recorded history, there are records of dogs being trained for the purpose of attacking a target. One of the most well-recorded ancient uses was in a battle between the Athenians in 11th and 7th BC and the Corinthians, in which dogs were used to keep watch over a fortress. And despite being unsuccessful in opposing an enemy attack, were able to alert the sleeping soldiers to the attack. So they are, that's what we have. You see guys keep the dogs in the yard. Some people have dogs in the house for that purpose, to protect the house. Some people have the gas station, the junkyard dog. You know, he did, you know, you come in there, he did to get at you. That's his job, protect that territory. Well, they had dogs like that back in the day. Anyway, ancient Romans in 5th century A.D. first adopted the use of dogs as a weapon after hordes of dogs delayed their victory in the Battle of Vercelli in 101 B.C. The Romans not only trained them to attack, but also bred their attack dogs for ferocity. Okay, so the effect of this was documented on, well, it's documented by Pliny, a Roman elder. He's known for writing a whole lot of stuff. You know, so who wrote that the animals would not back down even when confronted by swords. The Roman attack dogs were given metal of armor covered in razor-sharp spikes designed to force the enemy out of formation. So he would get up. That's his bulletproof vest. You know, if you got a sword, you got on some metal stuff, that's going to cut down on the rate that somebody could stick you with something, a sword or a knife or something like that, right? Anyway, razor-sharp spikes, you can't grab him, you know, so he's geared up for his situation. Napoleon, in 1804 to 1814, utilized dogs for their superior senses, putting them to work in roles similar to that of modern security dogs, right? The first use of attack dogs in the United States of America was suggested by Benjamin Franklin, good old Ben. He thought he was about flying kites and discovering electricity. First use of attack dog, Ben Franklin idea in the United States. In South Africa, under apartheid, right? We know how brutal that was, 1948 to the 1900s. South African Defense Force, right? 1957 to 1994, used wolf-dog hybrids as experimental attack dogs to combat guerrillas, people fighting for their freedom. That's not the story for the day, but this dog is being used as a weapon historically. That's the point I'm trying to get here. All right? He's using to terrorize and tear up some people, right? So he uses tear you behind up. Christopher Columbus. Well, sadly, you know, he fed Tiano all babies to hungry war dogs. So the African slave trade. The English bloodhound, while known for scent tracking, could not be induced to attack. They were often found licking slaves. So the captors brought in a vicious breed called the Cuban bloodhound or the Dongo Cubano. Did I see a Dongo dog? I think that dog was real muscular, like looked like a big pit with muscles, like big muscular, slim, big pit, tall pit. And I mean, the Dugo, some kind of dog. Anyway, they brought this Cuban dog in who not only going to sniff you out, he's going to chew you up when he catches you. He's going to kill you. They brought this dog in, which is not actually a bloodhound. The term bloodhound was used to instill fear in the slaves. The American Pit Bull Terrier gets its lineage viciousness toward animals and people from the Dogo Cubano. Take that for you dog people. All right. So the hound dog apparently is a friendlier dog. So if you just want to sniff out something, today, why don't you have a hound dog? They known for sniffing out some stuff. Right? Anyway. But you needed a weapon. So the dog gotta be able to smell something, and he gotta be able to get down when it's time to throw down. He gotta show his teeth and go, you know, rip off some flesh. Bite something, hold something down. Something. That's what it seems like. Because the dog is basically used, they didn't want to use in this scenario, they didn't want to use a dog that would just find a man. They wanted to use a dog that would, you know, chew him up. That's what a dog got teeth to do, to rip flesh. So they wanted a dog to also use his teeth to rip the flesh. The English Bloodhound, that's a nice dog, y'all. Seems like to me, I don't know, I'm just from this scenario, sounds like he's not a bad animal to have around the house. Anyway, these other dogs seem like they're quite vicious. From Jacobin, the Canine Terror. Dogs were important to both colonialization and the maintenance of black chattel slavery through the Americas. Now, just in case anybody taking those words to be like taking those colonialization and the maintenance of black chattel slavery, those are not words to be situations to be taken lightly. Colonialization is just a nice way of saying I'm taking what you have and I'm forcing you to submit to my will, or I'm killing what resists and I'm gonna do what I want to do. I'm gonna have my way with you and your land and your resources. That's colonialization. I'm the new power. I'm the new person in charge, the new culture in charge, the new government in charge. That's not a situation where people are gathered together to create a better way of life. That is one group of people being exterminated and dominated by another person, a group of people. All right, maintenance of black on chattel slavery, self-explanatory. I own you, and if you try to get away, I'm gonna send this dog after you, which we're gonna get into right now. So the Americans, according to some reports, indigenous peoples were literally fed to the dogs, right, in the Caribbean. You know, Chris Columbus, he was great for that. I'm sure he wasn't the only one. He didn't just make that up. And throughout the continental Americas, which that says Chris Columbus wasn't everywhere, right? They were literally feeding dogs to people. So far, dog being used as a weapon, a tool of destruction. These animals were tools of surveillance and fear, helping to annihilate indigenous the people who lived here, right? The people who were here before the dominators came, right? They were helping to annihilate, get rid of them, right? The people who lived here, right? That genocide and solidified the expansion of American capitalism through slavery. Okay? So that's very important to see, because this dog, they had a dog that wasn't vicious. They didn't want him. Said, so, he is sucking. We need something that got teeth that's going to use it. They don't need a sheriff that got a gun that don't want to shoot. They want to talk everybody down. They don't want that kind of dude. They want somebody that's going to do something. Going to put fear into the people that he's after. Going to put fear in the people who might run. Going to put fear in the hearts of the enemy. So a hound dog who's going to catch you and lick you is not going to put fear into you, right? But a dog that's going to catch you, eat you and lick his chops afterwards, that's going to put a lot of fear in people. Nobody wants to be eaten alive. All right? Nobody wants to be bitten by a dog or anything like that, mauled or anything like that. So there's the fear factor there. So this animal has historically, right, been used to instill fear to support dominance. That's very important to remember this whole thing about dominance, because dominance is something that people carry around on their shoulders also. Individuals want to express dominance also. It's not just a nation upon nation, people upon people, culture upon culture. You see individuals doing it also. But we're going to go on, we're going to, you know, keep, you know, going to the subject. So the Cuban bloodhounds, right, were physically imposing, right? Its size is very large. It's a very large hound with cropped ears and pointed noses. That sounds like a Doberman Pinscher to me. Because if you don't cut that Doberman Pinscher on, I'm not saying it is a Doberman Pinscher, but if you ever seen a Doberman Pinscher without its ears being cropped and his tail off, he doesn't even look that vicious. He looked like something you just walk up and pet. But as soon as they cut his ears, and he looks like a demon dog. So their skins were much harder than that of most dogs. So this dog is he's built for combat, they're saying. So, and their training would kill any other species of dog. So this dog, he's not just a bad dog. He's a bad dog to dogs. He's like, I mean, he would kill any other species of dog. So what do you think he's gonna do when you train him to go after a man? Cuban trainers forced black men to abuse the dog by whipping them daily. This is psychological warfare and training, encouraging the dogs still chained to the ground to bite their abuser. Now, I thought dogs didn't see color. So how would he know that there's a black man whipping him? So instead of, you know, I don't understand that, but maybe I don't know that much about dogs. I thought they were colorblind. Anyway, in theory, I guess they got the black men to do it. Once the dogs acquired a perfect hatred for their tormentor, the man charged with whipping the dog would run into the woods, daring it to chase him. Really? Okay. British and French rivals began purchasing these dogs from Spanish officials to suppress black revolts in their own colonies, granting the Cuban bloodhound international notoriety. So this dog is trained to attack the least, right? And his training is basically something like that Jason Bourne stuff. Like, you know, they messing with his mind. So the dogs were used to terrorize the Maroons under surrender during the Second Maroon War in Jamaica. So basically that means that these people were being dominated by Europeans, and they used dogs against them, basically. In 1795 to 96, in the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804, the exhibitions of canine violence proved to be one of the final horrors of French colonialism. You understand what I'm saying? If it's one thing constant here, is that this dog, the dog, is being used as a weapon historically. You got to understand that. He's being used as a weapon. That's it. Bloodhounds in Washington. The legend of these animals, fierceness and unity grew throughout the Americas between 1835 and 1842. The U.S. government brought them to what is now Florida to fight the Seminole Nation, another group of people being dominated by, that's constant here. I'm using the dog for war, for terrorism, tyranny, and a violence, right? And against the people that I am dominating, right? So they used against the Seminole Nation, right? That's down Florida. I heard they never stopped fighting. They held out as long as they could fighting the United States. Anyway, the Seminole Nation comprised of a collection of runaway slaves and indigenous people from the Americas, right? So, who united to contest the U.S. government's imperial expansion, right? Okay, the U.S. was the original get down and lay down cat. They the real deal. get down or lay down. When they came over, when the colonists came over here, the Europeans came over here, it's get down or lay down. It was especially expressed with the expansion of the of U.S. colonies. So they were very violent and vicious about, you know, the whole matter. The Cuban hound became preferred, the preferred breed among U.S. slavers, right, I said that, who increasingly deployed the animals across the South to support King Cotton. And if you know anything about cotton, this economy was built on a slave economy. Cotton, or the, I didn't know that cotton was that big, so I read about it. Like, it brought the United States industry into, made it a world power. Just the cotton that it was generating from here. Even though they didn't have that much in the North, the South made the North rich. That's how this thing began, and it spread out to, you know, other things. You know, they didn't just do cotton, but the cotton was the backbone. The slave culture, imprisonment of, you know, so-called African American black man in America, indigenous Africans and Africans from Africa. Anyway. I don't want to go off to the slave thing, but I have to touch upon it because of the use of these dogs. They deployed dogs also reinforced a border ideology from the slave era. They substantiated a historical understanding that even dogs themselves knew race. This supported the idea that blackness was biologically immutable and allowed the harsh enforcement of segregation in the South through the 1960s. All right? Now, I know we got a lot of people who experienced that, who lived through that period of segregation in the South, and they had segregation in the North. I don't want to give nobody an impression that if you came North, you were safe. Please don't get confused like that. This is not intended to do that. This is somebody else's fault, this anyway. The infusion of black Americans lived presence of police dogs persisted during the civil rights era, right? And we're talking about here, they're saying black Americans, right? And you can watch, you can go to YouTube and look at some of the, what they're talking about. During the civil rights era, I was in Martin Luther King, Mecca Edwards, and Abernathy, and Andrew somebody. He's a congressman anyway. They were marching, had nonviolent march through white communities for peace and equality for black people and people in general. What they did in the 1960s, they sicked these German shepherds on viciously attacked by police dogs. And not just dogs, they were hitting them with blackjacks, fire hoses, and so forth. Again, what we have again here is that theme. The theme is I'm using this dog as a weapon to dominate a people that I've been dominating since they've been here. Right? Again, you see that theme with the police department. All right? It said that protesters were viciously attacked by these dogs. Go check it out on YouTube or ask somebody to know. Activists seized on these emotional triggers and repeatedly highlighted the practice in public venues. John Lewis, a civil rights activist and repeat victim of police brutality, spoke at the 1963 March on Washington, remember that, Martin Luther King, right, and condemned the use of police dogs against young children and women. I don't know why he ain't condemning against men. But we're going to go on anyway. He had the young children and women in these protests engaged in a peaceful demonstration. Anyway, in 2013, the Los Angeles Police Department report revealed that a troublingly high number of American and Latino L.A. residents had been bit by police dogs. Now, I hope you're starting to see the pattern here. You know, because I didn't took you back to Christopher Columbus. And I'm bringing you up to 1913 at least, in terms of this documentation. But we have a troubling high number of African American and Latino LA residents who basically, as black Latinos, get chewed up by the police dogs. That's a red flag, right? More recently, the Department of Justice, the DOJ, reported officers in the Ferguson Police Department, right, in Missouri, only deployed police dogs against black victims, many of whom gave no provocation for the attack. Ferguson, right? That's when the brother, what's the boy, Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, right? So we have officers, so-called law enforcement, right, deploying police dogs, weapons, right, attack dogs, right, against black victims who aren't doing anything. They aren't provoking anybody to violence. No provocation. So you see the history. Now, they've been, some old habits die hard. Just because you're a police officer don't mean you stand for justice and all, you know, whatever, you know, obeying the law and things like that. So, but plenty of police officers who suck dogs on Martin Luther King and those marchers, on children, men, women, and children on a peaceful march, on slaves, on indigenous peoples. All right, so this country has a history of using the dog as a weapon to subdue people, to terrorize people. And the history of that. And keep that in mind. As I'm trying to drive, I'm not saying they shouldn't use the dog at all. But we're going to move forward. We'll get to that part because dogs have them, you know, some good attributes and qualities that we can use the dog for. As you said, the hound was used to track people. You know what I'm saying? So I understand that. But you're tracking a slave. That's the bad part, right? The victims included many an unarmed 14-year-old African-American boy who we see that the victims included an unarmed 14-American African-American boy who received a puncture wound from a dog bite. He's lucky, a puncture wound, because we know a dog's mouth is designed to puncture and rip. That's how he eats. So you watch a dog eat flesh. You let him eat off of something that's just flesh, and you'll see that he's designed to rip. His teeth are designed to rip. It's sharp, and it's not designed to hold anybody. It's not designed to hold you without injuring you. All right? Another one, a 16-year-old male who was dragged by his leg out of a closet by a dog, and an African-American man was bitten, yet still accused of being armed, even after a search turned up nothing. So it sounds like these guys, law enforcement, just, you know, I guess that's just a habit they can't, you know, just can't get out of that. Sticking these dogs, right, on people. Maybe they get a rush out of that or something. I don't know. Maybe that's their way of saying, hey, I bet that'll stop them. They know that we're coming with these dogs. Anyway, the DOJ report concluded that Ferguson police appeared to use canines not to counter a physical threat, but to inflict punishment. If I have to run after you, if I have to find you, if you are defiant, if you talk back to me, you smart, I'm going to stick this dog on you. Okay? That's what it sounds like. Anyway, modern law enforcement uses use of dogs for their effect rather than their utility. So the effect of dogs, historically, I just showed you. You know, a dog, naturally, his mouth is designed to bite, rip, puncture, and rip. So if you're using a dog, You're using him as a threat, as a weapon, just like you put a gun to somebody's head, or a knife, or a baseball bat setting up. You are using that dog as a weapon. So they say modern law enforcement use a dog basically as a weapon, rather than as a utility. It fits neatly into a dog's historical role of instilling fear and submission in African Americans. Now, I'm not excusing anybody who's committing a crime and putting themselves in a situation like that or anything like that. No excuse. I'm not excusing anybody. But come on. Innocent people and these dogs have no, they're not human. So how do they, you know, regulate, you know, what they're doing to somebody? Anyway, the police continuation of the tradition reveals their real mission in communities of color. That's not me saying that. That's these people from Jacobin. Jacobin. Mr. Charleston Yingling. Tyler Parry. Parry. So, fun provocative thought. They say that a dog is man's best friend. That depends on the relationship to the animal. Remember, those friendly police dogs attacking and chewing on protesters of the 60s, the nonviolent protesters in the 60s. Well, it didn't stop there. It didn't even begin there. That was just another progression in the use of dogs in the terrorism of people who are dominated or being dominated, right? Are we really supposed to think that a police dog respects the law, human life, can identify a suspect, and make a decision when it is necessary to injure, hold, release, or corral a suspect? If a police officer took a chunk of flesh out of a suspect or suspect's leg, he should be charged with use of excessive force or at least aggravated assault. If a dog is allowed to continuously bite a suspect or person, that amounts to torture, cruel, and inhumane punishment. Come on. We can't stop police officers from physically assaulting or murdering people. Do we really want to place a dog in that position? Really, we can't even stop the police officers from doing it. Now we're saying that we're giving license to a dog to assault and murder people. Is that right? Chew on people because you moved or something. We're going to go on. We're going to get more into this as we go along because it probably sounds like I'm beating dogs and police dogs up right now. But we got to understand, you know, this is a dog. This is not a police officer. You know, in certain circumstances, I can understand you protecting the dog as he's doing his job. He's a living thing. And as a dog should be protected, all dogs should be protected. Dogs who are just pets and dogs who are police officers. But he is not a police officer. He hasn't taken an oath. He don't know what an oath is. He can't tell you the first law. He can't tell you any law. He's a dog. He's always going to be a dog, all right? So that's, you know, you got to be realistic with these things. He's basically a weapon, an extension of the police, of the man who's supposed to be in control of him. And he's not really an extension. Metaphorically, he's used as an extension. Okay, so they say a police dog is considered or provided the same kind of protection under the law as a police officer, which is delusional simply because he is not trained as a police officer and obviously not human. The police dog does not have the same training as a police officer because he is a dog. We have enough issues with police brutality and misconduct to allow a dog the same privilege as a man. The police dog is also prone to misconduct, and we'll get into that. This is probably because he is just a dog, not his fault. He's doing, when he chew on you, he's doing what a dog does, especially when he's trained to chew on you, to use his mouth, which is designed to puncture and rip. That so-called police dog should be punished for assaulting a subdued suspect during an arrest or an innocent, and so should the dog's handler. Excessive biting is equivalent to excessive beating or shooting. Come on now. Make no mistake about it. These dogs are trained to attack with weaponized, which weaponizes the dog. He's trained to attack. He is a lethal weapon. His teeth are designed to rip, tear, destroy flesh, not hold it. Is it acceptable for a police officer to rip the flesh off of a subdued person? What about someone resisting arrest? I mean, how do we looking at this? From ABC News. Under the Federal Law Enforcement Animal Protection Act, which went into effect. When did that go into effect? It must have was in January 2000, somewhere in 2000, January. Anyone convicted of purposely assaulting, maiming, or killing federal law enforcement animals, such as police dogs and horses, could be fined at least $1,000 and spend up to 10 years in prison. Now, I don't know if y'all ever seen these dogs attacking people who are subdued, and you hear, you know, we're going to get into that. So, excuse me. Anyway, the federal law now protects canine court by Brian Robinson. For those, this is written in 2000. It says, for those tempted to punch a horse during a demonstration or kick a narcotics dog sniffing at your bag, the U.S. government has a new message. Keep your paws off or you will go to jail. Harmony's four-legged law agents is now a federal offense. It's a federal offense, y'all. Under the Federal Law Enforcement Animal Protection Act, anyone convicted of purposely assaulting, maiming, or killing a federal law enforcement animal, such as police dog and horses, could be fined at least $1,000, spend up to 10 years in prison. Previously, animals were covered by a variety of state rather than federal laws. So, let me see now. 10 years in prison, you kill one of these dogs. Amber Geiger sentenced to 10 years for murdering unarmed Botham John in his own apartment. Jason Van Dyke got 6 years for murdering Laquan McDonald, shooting him 14 times while he was on the ground. 6 years. Michael Slager got 20 years for shooting Walter Scott 8 times in the back because he ran away. He lied and obstructed justice. He got 20 years. That's cold-blooded murder. There is no reason for him to be angry or anything. He had nothing, you know. Walter Scott didn't take a swing at him. He can't even use that. Philando Castell was murdered by cowardly police officer Geronimo Yanez. Yanez was acquitted of all charges. He murdered this guy, Carr. Because he was afraid. He feared for his life. After the brother told him he had a weapon, he had a license to carry a weapon. And he had his woman and baby in the car. Man shot into the car at point blank range at least 4 times. Murdered this man. He He didn't get nothing. He acquitted. That's how much they care about those black lives. And they want to find a person for trying to defend himself against a vicious dog supposedly under the control of a police officer. Sometimes police officers are out of control. And historically, we've seen it during the 60s. We've seen it, period, dealing with black people in this country and Latinos or minorities, that these police officers are using these dogs as a weapon. This dog has been used as a weapon for a very, very long time. You know, and I'm sure these guys love their dogs. But stop using your dog as a weapon. Use him in an appropriate manner, and you put him, the dog, in less danger. All these laws you're making up, trying to give people, you want people to be subdued while the dog is chewing on his leg or his arm. That's not going to happen. Try it. Let a dog, put your arm in a dog's mouth and see if you can be, how still you can be while he's doing that. That's kind of, that's stupid. Nobody's going to be still. That situation needs to be stopped as soon as possible if you're using a dog like that. That dog needs to be taken out of that scenario as soon as possible. Anyway, the United States Police Canine Association and the Humane Society believe the new law will not only provide more protection for the animals. I don't know how you're going to protect anybody by creating a law. We have laws against murder. And guess what? We are murdering people in this country at an alarming rate. Laws do not protect you. They're after the fact, and they're not protecting you from nothing, especially in the heat of things. Law is the last thing somebody's thinking about. But they also deter criminals, particularly in drug stings, from targeting canines. Okay, so that means the guy selling drugs, he's not going to shoot the dog who's sniffing around, trying to get his, look into his drug stash or wherever, however that works out. That's understandable. As long as he's not have his teeth on somebody, because you can't expect even a criminal not to defend himself against a dog. Cause that's an unrealistic expectation right there. You know, and even though some people don't do anything, when you run into somebody that does, that's a person that's doing what he's supposed to do naturally. So that reaction, and you can't expect that. I have the means of getting this dog off of me. He's chewing up my arm. And I'm not going to do it because it's a federal offense to kill him. That's an unrealistic expectation. The stronger punishment recognizes the animals as partners who are valued by human officers. And I find some something very unusual about that, who are valued as human officers. Anyway, if it protects the animal, then it's great, they said. But if it doesn't, then at least now the punishment will be more in line with the violation, he says. We're hoping that once people hear about the new law and the punishment they will face, they will be deterred from hurting a federal law enforcement animal before the animals are classified as a piece of equipment. No, before the animals were classified as a piece of equipment, like a computer or a police car. How about more like a gun or a knife? From provocative thought, that animal doesn't even know the law that he say he is enforcing. He is being used as a tool, a weapon, point blank. He didn't choose to be a police. To be a police officer, he was chosen and trained to be one. And he didn't sign up for the police force. Come on, let's keep it real. We can't have these delusional ideologies and laws that back that kind of stuff, and you want people to submit to it. You know, just say you're going to lock somebody up for destroying your weapon, even if your weapon was wrong and you was wrong. Just say you're going to lock them up for that. Are they going to get charged, they're going to fine or something like that. You know, Dahl's not a law enforcement. He works for law enforcement. He just happened to be a live organism. But he's a tool. He's used as a tool. Come on. Well, they say, the law recognized that an animal is not like a computer and is a living thing that has to be taken care of. Though the animal is not a person, the bond with the human officer is still there. What about the human-to-human bond that is supposed to exist? What are they talking about? A federal law or regulating the bond of a police officer has with a police dog? Hey, that's nothing to do with federal government. That's not that. Who got that law passed? You already had laws of protecting the assaulting a police dog, but you need to have laws when these dogs assault human beings. And it's like a person's dog next door. If that dog bites you, oh, that dog could be put down. Why are these police dogs not being put down? They're chewing on people's legs and all that stuff, down to the bone and all this nonsense. That's not good police work. Don't put the dog in that situation. It's a dog. Do not put him in that situation. Care about him? You wouldn't put him in that situation. Before the law went into effect, Police Canine Association had received reports that narcotics dealers had put out bounties on narcotics dogs that had thwarted, right, and come dangerously close to foiling their operations or previous encounters. Federal Law Enforcement Animal Protection Act, introduced by Representative Jerry Weller, a Republican of Illinois, was approved by the House of Representatives sometime in October. In 1999. Anyway, there are no national statistics on the number of animal fatalities suffered annually. The Canine Association says that assaults on law enforcement animals were on the rise when the bill was proposed. According to the association, 8 police dogs were killed while on duty between 1998 and 1999. 8 police dogs killed. That's in, I guess that's about a year or 2 years. You go from 1998 to 1999, you count the whole year, that's 2 years. But Weller believes that law enforcement animals needed greater protection under federal law because of the dangerous situation they face and because the bond they share with their human colleagues. I'm telling you right now, not sending a dog, my dog, that I care about. If we're going to fight, we're going to fight together. I'm going with him. We're going to rumble, then chew to come in my house. I ain't going to send my dog downstairs while I sit upstairs. I'm going down there with him. If I love him that much, we both going to tear a hole in whoever's breaking into my crib or my property. We both going to tear that up. Anyway, dogs and horses, lives are on the front line against drug runners and violent criminals every day. Listen to that. Historically, that has not been the case. Law enforcement officers have told him that police dogs are the first sent into to survey dangerous crime scenes involving drugs, bombs, and other high-risk situations. A dog is the first thing sent in there. You love him, right? You care about him. That's your partner. That's the first. They the first one sent in. From provocative thought, that's because he's just a dog. He doesn't perceive the danger he's in. He might know how to sniff a bomb out, but he doesn't know that it could be the last time he sniffs a bomb out. Sending the dog in first is indicative of not valuing the life of the dog as much as the life of a human. The dog is first to get shot or blown up, kind of showing you don't really care about that dog the way you care about a human being. Why don't you go in there with him? Ain't not going in there with him because it's unsafe. Unsafe for human, not for dog, okay? We don't want the human to get killed. We'll risk this dog getting killed. So ties to human assaults, Wayne Pasil, Senior Vice President for Communications and Government Affairs at the Humane Society, says the federal law is an overdue recognition of the work of law enforcement animals and their sacrifices. The law will not only protect the canines and horses on duty, but ultimately protect human beings. Whoop. He believes the law recognizes the link between attacks on animals and assaults on human beings. Maybe that will prevent people from transferring their violent tendencies and actions on other people. I don't know where my man is getting his information from. Oftentimes, studies have shown violence against animals pre-stages violence against people. We talking about social psychopaths, people? Are you kidding? This has nothing. Anyway, it's important that law enforcement agencies, judges, and prosecutors take these acts very seriously as an indicator of future violence. Violence against animals. You get into your DSM. You can see how to relate that to sociopaths and things like that. I don't know what that guy, why he even mentioned that. But anyway, from a provocative thought. Violence, movement, defense against an animal that is ripping through your flesh is a natural and appropriate. So it's natural for you to respond violently to a dog that's putting his mouth around any of your extremities or anywhere on your body. It is ludicrous to expect an individual to be still. A so-called police dog officer is sinking his teeth into their flesh. Only a sick mind can only make such a requirement. Sounds like it's something right out of slavery. The dog is a weapon used. He's used in real life. He's used in real life threatening situations, not that perceived BS used to excuse misconduct, assaults, and homicide. So the dog is a weapon, right? Used in real life threatening situations. Like, it makes sense. Somebody's trying to kill you. That dog, if you got him out there as a weapon and somebody's trying to attack you, let that dog go because that's a distraction. Even the dude got a gun, that's a distraction. And it gives you time to pull your revolver out and do what you got to do. You got to tap that guy out and tap him out before you shoot your dog, hopefully. So, so that's a distraction for that kind of situation. So, and thumbs up for the bomb and drug tracking dogs. You know, that they doing their jobs. We appreciate that. I said, but according to the press accounts, approximately, they got 8 dogs in 2 years, right? Killed. But according to press accounts, approximately 1,300 people have been attacked since 1987, making those police dogs, which are supposedly under the control of officers, the most dangerous canine unit in the country. That was written in March 6, 2002. So here we have it. Canine to people. We have more canines ripping people up than we have people killing canines. So what's up the federal law? From ABC News again. When police dogs grow too vicious. See, I understand. These are dogs. Stop tending their anything that they aren't actually. It's a dog. And when you train him to use one of his attributes, which is his attribute to attack, his nature to attack. He doesn't have hands. He has a mouth. He attacks to eat and to defend. That's what he does. Subduing is not on the menu for a dog. He doesn't have teeth for subduing. He doesn't have extremities for subduing. So when he attacks, you teach him to attack and subdue, he's going to injure somebody. Now, I'm thinking a dog is not going to let you injure him. So I'm holding you down. I'm a dog. I'm holding you down, sinking my teeth into your arm, biting you, and you punching me in the face. I'm going to bite down a little harder, and I may choose another part of your body. I'm just saying, I'm thinking that he has his, he does have a sense of self-preservation. And if you try to hurt him, he's going to eventually try to hurt you. Let's just leave it like that. Because I know if I was a dog, I'm subduing you. And you punch me in the face, you hurt me. I'm going to have to say, this biting on this guy's arm is not helping me out. I need to hit him somewhere else. So I might be inclined to go somewhere else. Even as a human being, if I'm holding you by the arm and you punch me in the face, I might have to do something else to you. So maybe the dog thinks the same way. And I can imagine that he does. How else could he survive and naturally if he doesn't think, I need to do something else. This is not working. I need to do something else. You know? Anyway. Guys saying from ABC News. March 6, 2002. Louis Azure Dia accidentally set off an alarm while working to remove asbestos from a school in 1997. A canine police unit was dispatched to the school, and Azurda was attacked by a dog. See? After being arrested and treated for his wounds and then not charged with any crimes, Azurda sued and received an undisclosed settlement. When Willie Walker was arrested in 1977, he was repeatedly bitten by a police dog. Though he was found to be guilty of no crimes, he was seriously injured and suffered permanent disfigurement. Why? Because this dog is doing what a dog does. And if you look at him for what he is, he's doing what a dog does, but he's not doing what they say he's supposed to be doing. And, you know, Esther Fat DeKine was asleep in her own bed in 1955 when police say, right, she was mistaken for a burglar. Her face was mauled by police dogs. It's a dog, not a man. Not a police officer. All this federal law stuff, so I need to get out of here with that. That's crazy. Was that dog put down? Was the police officer supposed to be in control of that dog fired? They got a federal law for that? No, because they're dominating. That's an interesting question. No, because they are dominating. They're part of the dominant. See? And anyway, all three incidents took place in Prince George County, Maryland, about 25 minutes from Washington, D.C., where dogs, the dogs, often 110-pound German Shepherd, that's a big dog, y'all, are the county's trained police canines. But according to press accounts, approximately 1,300 people have been attacked since 1987, making these police dogs, which are supposedly under the control of officers, the most dangerous canine units in the country, y'all. The police dog is a very valuable asset, said James Fife, a former New York City police officer who tracks alleged police misconduct nationally. But when they're misused, they're awful. Awful is not, that's not a word to describe with these biting off, mauling somebody's face. That's not awful. All right? That's way past awful. And like all weapons, their misuse can lead to devastating consequences. You think? Unlike the police gun, a dog never misses, they said. Never misses. They're very, very serious. They're torn up bicep muscles, tricep muscles, torn noses and ears off, and really left maiming injuries. Well, is that what we're setting out to do here with these dogs? It sounds like it. Historically, right? These guys are just continuing the process because that's what's going on, right? According to Fife, the problem with the dogs of Prince George County is really a problem with the officers who handle them, as I alluded to earlier. In some cases, he said, the officers' use of the dog as four-legged forms of excessive force, right? We got Christopher Columbus. We got the American colonists. We have the slave the slave owners, or what you want to call them, whatever you want to call them. You have the Ku Klux Klan, the police departments. You have all these people using this dog historically as a weapon, and it continues to right now. And the NBA, these guys passing federal laws to protect the dog, who had no ability to make types of decisions. He only knows to do what he does. It's not his fault. He's doing it. It's the handler's fault, and it's true. And it's the police department's fault, and it's this city or wherever he works at fault for allowing dogs, putting dogs in a situation they can't handle. Using to sniff out some dope. There you go. That's good. He ain't hurt nobody. But he cannot subdue a person. And without harmony, it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, you got a situation there. Dog coming at somebody, you might as well kill him. Because that's the thinking. Oh, I'm about to kill this. Oh, he's going to kill me. This dog is going to kill me. He's a dog. He's a German, 110-pound German Shepherd. You only thinking about one thing. This dog can kill me. So, yeah, a person's going to defend himself against that dog. Yeah, he might be deterred to attack the dog if he maybe thinks the police officer's his name. What if no police officer's there to get that dog off of that person? What if that person doesn't want to be bitten by that dog? And I've seen some of the injuries. So I understand why a person defends themselves against a dog. Drug dealers, you don't have no right to kill no dog sniffing out your stuff. But you have a right to defend yourself against an animal trying to take your life or a police officer trying to take your life unjustly. You're not presenting a deadly threat. You have a right to defend yourself. Or are we supposed to allow law enforcement or all the tools of law enforcement to kill us because there's a federal and a state law that protects this animal? Are we supposed to allow these animals to kill us? I say no. You haven't done anything wrong. Like that man, he got bit up by the dog. Said, oh, what if he had picked up a pipe, defended himself against the dog? Should he go to jail for that? Because that's a police officer, and we got federal laws defending him against that? He's innocent. I need to rethink this whole thing. Don't send the dog cannot make those type of decisions. The dog should not be running around the person that's in charge of him. The dog belongs on a leash. Keep him on a leash till you see a lethal threat. Then you let him go. But then you need to be backing that dog up. Send him in there by himself. You wouldn't go in there by yourself. You're sending him in there. Send the dog in there by himself. Back him up. Give him a backup. Ain't that what the police want? When they go out, they want backup. I'm going in that dog up. Send him in there like that. He can't make that decision. Some people not able to make that decision in that situation. They will kill you, police officer or civilian. Once they feel threatened, they're gonna kill what's coming at them. They're gonna try to kill it. Can't send a dog in that situation. I think they're setting the dogs up. And unless you're using the dog to kill somebody, like in war or something like that, or it's a life-threatening situation, you are setting the four-legged animal that you claim to care so much about up. Not just him. You're setting the person you're sending them up after that up. So I can see why people would defend themselves. I mean, it's natural to defend yourself against anything that's attacking you, man or beast, in blue or not in blue. You can't just expect people not to defend themselves. Why? You abuse them. That's that slave mentality. That's where it's all coming from. It's all coming from I'm dominant, you're a subordinate. I do what I want to do to you without consequences. You submit to me. Anything you do is a threat to me, whether it's in protection of your life or not, it's a threat to me. I will punish you. We got to get up out of that slave mentality. That thing got to go away. People have this, you want people to submit to that mentality? People using the dog the way it's been used since the Europeans came over here? The dog has historically been used as a weapon, and he continues to be used as a weapon. And if you care about him like the way you say you do, then you wouldn't be using him as a weapon, number one. Get in there and do your job as police officer. Come on. You be right beside the dog. At least be there with him. And he should be able to discern, oh, is this man somebody I need to attack or not? He can't do it. Do not send him in there alone. He's a dog. Some people fear dogs. So while your dog is busy getting invading people's personal space, I don't know if it's a drug bust or what, but you got to understand, people have personal space and fear of dogs. And a 110-pound German Shepherd, nobody wants that dog around them sniffing. We know you did it with the slaves. We know you suck them on the nonviolent civil rights people and stuff like that. We know you sick them on these dogs on people all over the country, through the history of the country. But it's got to stop. If you care about the dog, even if you care about people, I don't even know what I'm saying. You care about the dog, the people. If you care about life, the life of the animal, the life of the person, then you need to find another way to deal with the situation. Because all this dog mauling people, I've seen pictures that didn't make sense. They're telling a guy who was on his stomach, dog chewing up his leg, telling the guy to be still. How you going to? And the dog chewed his leg to the bone. They're telling him to be still instead of getting the dog immediately off this man. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. He's supposed to defend himself against that. I don't care if the guy's in blue or not. That's the kind of stuff you need to defend yourself. You know why you need to defend yourself? Because if you know if he did that, the guy's in blue would have blew his head off. Problem. That's tyranny. That's not police work. You're not taking care of. You're not protecting the person you're supposed to be arresting. That's not good police work. Do your job, and you'll see that you have less situations where people are accusing police officers of wrongdoing if you do your job. If you care about that animal. You can't care about, you can't send that animal into danger and say you care about them. That's crazy. Anyway. They said, I've never encountered a situation they did in Prince George County. He said, Prince George County, the professionalism and training of the dogs is not, the dog's not even trained good. The dog's job is not to torture. Julius Booker would certainly agree. In October 1977, he abandoned an allegedly stolen van and attempted to flee on foot from canine officer Anthony Milio and his dog. King Booker. Booker said that even after he was caught and handcuffed, the dog bit him repeatedly. That kind of stuff right there, come on. Now, he's a bad guy if he kicked that dog in the mouth. Are you kidding? And you're going to protect that dog under the federal statute. Are you kidding? And you're going to protect that police officer under some federal whatever statute you got protecting them under. Are you kidding me? This is the same stuff folks been going through for years in this country. He merely let the dog continue to bite me, said Booker, in a taped disposition. I couldn't do nothing. I was handcuffed, face to the dirt, crying, begging for mercy. Really? What is that? Street justice? What is that? That's violation of his due process, his human rights, his civil rights? Come on. They're justified in letting the dog go after somebody that has fled. She said of canine officers, but the dog's job is not to torture somebody. The dog catches him. Tell me, how can a dog train to bite down, right, harder than he normally bites? Those dogs are trained to bite harder than a normal German Shepherd. A German Shepherd in your house, not biting down as hard as these dogs. Like, he's trained, that training does not train this dog to catch. It trains him to bite through flesh. They said in most cases, the police officers aren't in danger when the people are bitten. Booker said, she was running from a stolen. He was running from a stolen van, which was not violent crime. He's not doing anything to the police officer, and they're just letting the dog bite him, and continually bite him. Come on, y'all. No discriminatory action was taken against Emilio, who has since been transferred out of the unit. In court documents, Emilio estimated that in a six-year period, his dog bit 30 to 40 people, 15 seriously enough to be admitted to the hospital. And see, really, you know, this is a problem. Police say that most dog bites occur during the course of legitimate arrest when a canine unit is called to help locate or apprehend a suspect. But Downtown found many cases when the victim was guilty of nothing more than being in the wrong place at the wrong time, that he cannot make a distinction between, okay, I'm looking for you. That's the guy I'm looking for, right? No, that guy. No, I'll get him. He can't. He's not a human being. He said, I looked over and saw the dog coming at me. 4-4, said Gregory Chantley, a police officer who was pursuing a suspect. One of Prince George County's police dogs ran toward him. A police officer, man in blue or undercover, I don't know what he was. But anyway, dog came at him. All I could do was stick out my arm, and he grabbed hold the arm, said Chantley. The dog wouldn't let go. Come on, y'all. But I can see why these dogs are doing what they're doing. They're trained to do that, and they're encouraged to do that by their handlers. And they ain't no caring about no dog. They don't care about no dog. You send them out by itself. Supposedly they ran into a child. Small child. Anyway. Another guy was bitten. This is a whole bunch of people just bitten. One guy was bitten in a hammock. That's the thing you sleep on between the trees. You lay in it behind his house. While unbeknown to him, police were pursuing a burglary suspect. He was violently awakened and thrown out of the hammock by K-9 unit officer Stephen Moore and her dog. Moore resigned after being found guilty of deprivation of rights. She was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Moore is appealing her verdict. What happened to the dog? You got federal laws protecting the dog. What happened to the dog? Is the dog responsible? You understand what I'm saying? Come on now. Critics say Moore was protected by the Department of Justice because the county is unable or unwilling to discipline its officers. Oh, yeah, you think so. In 1966, Farrell was hired to reform the department. John Farrell, County's police sheriff, was, I guess he's pulled this, get everybody back in shape. They sticking the dogs on everybody down there thinking it's Martin Luther King and they after, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, which had a reputation for using excessive force. So if they use excessive force with the dogs, they probably use excessive force, period. Anyway, by July 2001, all 14 dogs in the unit were replaced. All 14 dogs in the unit were replaced. That's right. You got to get rid of them. Instead of being trained to bite and hold, the new dogs had been instructed to guard and bark, he said. So now, as long as the suspect stays still, the dog is trained only to bark rather than to bite. Well, who knows that? How many people you know is going to stay still with a German Shepherd running toward them? Especially an innocent person. See that dog running towards you? I'm going for the gate. Because I remember when I was a kid, the guys used to come around with the German Shepherds, whatever kind of dog they had. As soon as we saw them dogs, I'm 10 years old. As soon as we saw them dogs, we knew to hit for the top of the gate. We in the schoolyard, we see them turn the corner, bam, we would beeline for the gate. Baseball, skateboarding, whatever the hell we were doing, marbles, whatever we was doing was over. It was hit the top of that gate. Because the dogs was coming. So it's instinctive. I'm 10 years old doing that. We climb to the top of the gate, dogs blow us. We cool. So, you know, that's better. But that person is going to run, especially a suspect, especially a guilty suspect. You know what I'm just saying? Like, he don't want to get caught by a dog or a policeman, so he's probably going to get bitten. But that takes a hell of a constitution to see a 110-pound dog running towards you, and you going to stop and say, nice boy, don't bite me. I'm going to stay right here till the police come and put the cuffs on me. That's very difficult. So because your natural instinct is going to be to run when you see that. You know, most people's natural instinct is to see, when they see a dog, is to get away from them. So we have natural instinct, guilty or not, to run or fight or fight. Flight or fight. That's what we're going to do. So I think that you need to be with your dog. Then that person presenting a threat, then you need to go into go get him. He's trying to kill you, pull out a gun, try to shoot you. Shoot, you know, I understand that. Your dog got to handle that. But, you know, you need to be handling having your dog back so that your dog don't get shot up, so you don't get shot up. Work with the dog. It don't sound like you're working with him. It sounds like he's still using dog as a weapon. But he's not a weapon that can be sent on his own because he has that ability to turn that corner before you. You know what I'm saying? That's like sending your gun out you know, if you could do something like that, you're going to send a weapon out and you're going to let the weapon decide whether or not how to deal with that situation. You can't do that. Dogs are weapons, historically weapons, used as weapons. Keep that in mind. But in January, there's a report of an incident at a gas station where a canine unit officer allegedly allowed his dog to unnecessarily maul suspect. The complaint came out from the person allegedly attacked, but from a fellow. The complaint came not from the person allegedly attacked, but from a fellow police officer on the scene. Thumbs up to that police officer doing your job. The county police and FBI were looking into it. A fellow police officer filed the complaint. Are you kidding? Y'all looking into it? They're trained to latch on to fleeing suspects as they use all the force they have to keep them from escaping. Now, all the force I have to keep you from escaping is not going to penetrate your skin. If a dog is using all the force he has, right, to stop you from running away, that means basically he's ripping the flesh off your arm. Arr, he's biting as hard as he can. All right? The police dogs, however, typically bite the suspect's torso. They may even go for the head or throat if they perceive the suspect to be a serious threat. That's what I was just saying. The dog ain't going to let you. He ain't going to let you hurt him. I actually want to turn it into something else. So this is a bunch of the scenarios unrealistic, which is why you should only employ a dog like that alone. Let him off the leash when you have a lethal threat in front of you. And then you don't have to worry about nobody debating about, you know, your decision to use the dog. The police dogs are taught to bite and hold. They know to bite with more force than civilian dogs are typically capable of. This is from Lil Jagreen Law Group. It said the police dogs is known to bite with more force than civilian dogs are typically capable of. And once they latch on to a suspect, they don't let go. Although they're meant to make law enforcement officers' jobs easier and provide unique advantages in the field, police dogs are still capable of inflicting serious undue harm. Come on, a dog latching on to your arm with full force. It said while a civilian German Shepherd may bite with a force of 200 to 400 pounds per square inch, a fully trained German Shepherd is capable of biting with the force of 1,500 pounds per square inch. They're trained to latch on a fleeing suspect, and they use all the force they have to keep them from escaping. Can you be still while a dog is doing that? Can you not defend yourself? Can you blame a person for not fighting back while a dog is doing that to him? For example, any punctures through the entirety of the skin require immediate medical attention, as do wounds to the face, neck, head, and genitalia. Usually run a much smaller risk of carrying infectious disease than civilian dogs, as they must be kept up to date with their shots. However, any dog bite can cause infections and extremely dangerous, depending on what part of the body is bitten. Are you kidding? It is considered good police work to rip through. Is it considered good police work to rip through all fleeing suspect genitals? That's the question I'm asking. Most bites from civilian dogs are to the extremities, usually the hands and the arms. Police dogs, however, typically bite the suspect's torso. What's up with that? They may even go for the head or throat if they perceive the suspect as a serious threat. Liabilities for injuries. Anyone injured by a canine unit needs to understand their legal rights. If the dog was improperly trained and inflicted serious life-threatening wounds on a nonviolent suspect, the people responsible for the dog's training regimen may be accountable for the undue harm inflicted by the animals they supervise. If the canine unit wasn't up to date on shots and a bitten suspect becomes ill from disease or infection, the dog supervisor would face additional liability charges. Is it federal law with that? Do they have federal law for that? Police use terms like apprehend, restrain to try to portray it as a very antiseptic event, Cook said. But wait a minute, this is from, I'm going too fast. This is from WBURN News. All right. Police dogs use terms like apprehend or restrain to try to portray it as a very antiseptic event, right? But you look at the video and the dog is chewing away on his leg and mutilating him. Cook says the proliferation of smartphones and body cameras is capturing a reality that used to be lost on juries. If it's a good video, he says, it makes a case much easier to prevail on. You can do through a dog attack what you cannot do yourself, he says. The latest definition of body cameras worn by police, especially clear views. Cook collects these videos and on his computer, and what strikes him as is the degree of bloody violence the dogs can inflict. You can do through a dog attack what you cannot do yourself, right? Because we don't have sharp teeth, right? You can't do it with the baton because the baton is always going to be swung by a cop. The taser is always going to have its trigger point by a cop. But the dog, it's the dog that did it, not the cop, right? So they're excusing the behavior. But the dog is in the control of the cop. Just like you got your pet dog, you're walking down the street, and he bites somebody. That's on you. Well, that's on that cop. But they scapegoating the dog here, they're saying. Get up to speed on the news. Boston is talking about. That's not even part of what I'm saying. Dog handlers reject this characterization. They say dogs are valuable methods of subduing dangerous suspects while protecting officers from harm. They point out that a dog can be called back after it's been unleashed, unlike the deployment of a taser or firing a gun. And there's the use of force rules. Most departments require police to shout out clear warnings before a dog is unleashed. Spokane Police canine officer Dan Laser, an experienced dog handler and trainer, says he weighs several factors before releasing his dog. What is the risk of allowing this guy to escape armed with a gun? What kind of damage, what kind of mayhem is he going to cause if we allow him to escape and go carjack a car or go kill somebody or something like that. That's a lot right there from a suspect with a. How do you figure that everybody with a gun is gonna carjack somebody? But anyway, I think the immediate threat is it should be I don't know. And you know, some of these guys with these guns need to be caught. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you get talking about those guys, don't put yourself in that situation for you criminals. You don't want to get bit by the police dog, and don't put yourself in that situation. Where you're robbing people and stuff like that. Don't do it. That doesn't excuse the behavior. They said the threshold for releasing dogs appears to be lower in many of the recent videos. Sometimes police send the dog in response to threats that seem more hypothetical than real. In one case, body cam cameras in 2015 caught San Diego police officers using a dog on a naked man who was high on LSD. Oh, yeah, he's dangerous. Naked man, that's a very dangerous situation. Bit this man for 52 seconds. The threat posed by the man was bald fists and the presence of stones on the ground. Ain't that something? That's right up there with I fear for my life, basically. And to know there's no imminent threat, I'm just going to create one. And I'm telling you it's one, so I'm a police officer. You accept my statement. I'm going to control the narrative, and we're going to stick this dog on this guy. Responded, so it's just a lot of that stuff going on. This dog is, so we have 90 seconds left, and, you know, I'm just saying, you know, there are reasons to use dogs. And there are reasons to unleash a dog on a person. But when you unleash a dog, you have to make sure that dog is unleashed on an imminent threat. And that there's no chance that this dog will attack innocent people. And that makes sense to me. Guys, do your own research. There's plenty more situations, but, you know, I'm sure you... You know, if you've been listening, you can hear how the canines have traditionally been used. And I want to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host the show, Mr. Ken Jones, and my listeners and callers. Thank you very much, and hope I was able to share some information and enlighten some people here tonight. Until next week, each one reach one, each one teach one, and remember, y'all, you know, take care of yourself during this trying period we have this coronavirus, the flu virus, and whatever other things that ails us. Read, learn, so that you can address, so that you can be able to address some of the issues that we're having in our society, our world society. You need to be up on what people are doing, what they're saying, what they represent, things like that. Good night.